Welcome to Passion and Purpose with Pamela, celebrating all things woman. I'm Dr. Pamela Hardy Shepherd, here to ignite inspiration through conversations that spotlight women's power and their journeys. Let's share our light, our stories, and create a space of celebration for every woman. Here's to embracing our womanhood together.
Welcome to Passion and Purpose with Pamela, where stories of strength, service, and impact take center stage. Today, we are honored to sit down with Lamone Brady Russell, a trailblazer in healthcare whose career spans over two decades of service, critical care, pediatrics, leadership, and nursing education. Lamone is more than a nurse. She is a force of compassion, courage, and excellence. Her incredible contributions to the field have earned her the Texas Nursing Association Top 25 Outstanding Nurses Award, the Daisy Regional Award for Educators, and the Good Samaritan Foundation Bronze Award, all within the past 2 years. She is also the author of Dear Nurse, Reward Yourself, Reward Your Patient, a must-read for anyone navigating the calling of nursing. Most recently, Lamone stepped into a new role as a breast cancer survivor and advocate, using her story to uplift and empower nurses facing similar battles. Whether educating future nurses or encouraging those on the front lines, Lamone continues to lead with heart, resilience, and purpose. Please join me in welcoming the extraordinary Lamone Brady Russell to the podcast. So, Lamone, I have already introduced you, and I was wondering if you would just tell the listening audience in your own voice and tell us a little bit about you. How did you become
a nurse? Of course. So I am Lamone Brady Russell. I am a master's prepared nurse by profession, and I'm currently a night nurse educator, which is a fairly new phenomenon, but one that I'm absolutely loving. I have been a nurse for 24 years.
Wow.
Sounds like a very long time, but I've been a nurse for 24 years. And on the personal side, I am married with two children, and I am I've graduated to a cancer survivor and advocate most recently on my professional side. In fact, today is my 1 year anniversary of not only being diagnosed, but also just recently in remission as of this week. Wow. So it's a new milestone. So that's
that
just
wonderful.
A little bit about me.
Well, tell us, how did you decide to become a nurse? Because I think that's really important for people to understand you're in service to others. Tell us a little bit about that.
Well, it was a circuitous route. And I say that because, funny story, my granddad, who is my dad's dad, when I was born, he said, "This one is going to become a nurse." And for the longest time in my family, you know, it was a running joke. And I just thought, oh, yes, me become a nurse, because I was a tomboy, Pamela, if you can believe it. So I was a tomboy for most of my life. And so when I started going to my teens, and my dad was like, "What are we going to do with your life, young lady?" I thought, okay, let me do industrial science. And he was like, okay, well, the best industrial science program is going to be in Canada. And I was 15. And he was like, "Is that what you want to do?" And I was like, "Well, maybe not." Then I thought, you know, let me do medicine. And I felt myself drawn to healthcare and some kind of profession in service. And I thought, let me do medicine. And then I looked at the years of study. And I also became, you know, friends with doctors. And I thought, no, that is not where I want to be. And so I decided, you know what, why not nursing? It's more in line with my personality. I didn't want to just, you know, all respect to doctors, throw the medicine and keep going because you have so many patients. But I wanted to have that personal interaction where you hold a patient's hand, you go through this very difficult time in their lives, and you help them to navigate that in a practical way that is tangible. And so I want to say nursing chose me. That's what I want to say, because I started out when I was very early. I wasn't even supposed to be in that program. They would only take 17-year-olds, and I was 15, hadn't been done before. And so they were like, What are you doing here, child? Where there is milk around your mouth, what's happening? But that's where my nursing journey started. And I started at 15, graduated at 19. And like I always say, nursing chose me because it wasn't supposed to happen. But I'm so happy it did.
That is so incredible. 15 years of age. Most young people have no clue in what they want to do at 15. They have some semblance of maybe this is what I want to do, but to actually be in a program, a nursing program, which is rigorous, to say, I'm just like, wow, I'm wowed. I am so impressed. That is, oh my goodness. Well, people rely on nurses. And as you know, my mother was a nurse, so I have this soft spot. And I always see nurses in service to others. You make or break a patient. You encourage them. You tell them it's going to be all right. You take the prescriptions from the doctor and ensure it's correct. And just kind of give us a broad view of what a nurse does, because you've done a myriad of things. So you can go from education to pediatrics to leadership,
True.
wherever you want to start. I want our viewers to understand really what nurses really, really do.
Yes, so a nurse is, I feel, and it's going to sound cliche, like it is a calling. And I think nursing, the face of nursing has changed since COVID, but I want to go back to the basics of what nursing is and what nurses should be. Nurses are the gap stoppers between what is prescribed and when you go home to your reality. So nurses should be compassionate, we should be caring. We should be smart and be able to plug in all the things that are missing and to connect those dots so patients feel as though, one, they're being cared for, they're being listened to, and they're being set up for success. So a nurse really comes in where we are doing a lot of interdisciplinary action. We're doing a lot of interdisciplinary collaboration. Okay, this is what's happening with the patient. You are the first person that the patient is going to see. When they come through that door, whether it's an ER, whether it's a SNF, whether it's at a school, they're coming to you to get help. I promise, patients don't love to come to the hospital because, hey, I'm getting free sandwiches, even be cold. They aren't coming for that, you know? And so when they come in, they're looking for somebody who is wanting to say, hey, what's wrong? How can I help? That sense of urgency, that sense of compassion, like we can help you, come to us. So that openness, that wanting to help people, that is the first nugget that should let you know, okay, maybe nursing is for me. That is the first thing. I want to say too that it is rigorous. Like you said before, it is not for sissies
No.
because it is a rigorous program. Nursing school alone is very rigorous. You have to do clinicals, you do a lot of pathophysiology, you not do a lot of comprehensive, wholesome care. We are plugging in the human aspect as well as the scientific and the physiological aspects. And you're bringing that together to the core where you are taking this to the patient where you can connect those things together. So as nurses, we are problem solvers. We should be solution oriented because we're taking these two aspects and the patient is depending on us to say, hey, my blood sugar is 250 today, but I want ice cream. How do I navigate that? Nobody does not want ice cream. I know that it's so many no's in one sentence, but you want to have your patient have ice cream, but there's a way to safely navigate that. You know, a patient is going for a procedure. They haven't done it before. They need somebody who's going to take the time and hold their hand and say, hello, little Miss Pam. Okay, we're going to have an MRI today. I know it sounds scary. It's going to be a big cylindrical machine. There's going to be lots of noise, but I'm going to be right outside. We're going to give you some medicine. It's going to be okay. We're going to be safe. And so they're looking for that comfort and knowledge and compassion rolled into one. And that is what really nurses should be doing.
Wow. I have to say, I love it because I was always taught about bedside manner. The bedside manner makes a difference. It does,
Absolutely.
whether it is the nurse or it's the doctor. And I just have to say personally, I shy away from doctors and nurses that do not have a good bedside manner, because that tells me you don't want to be there. or something
Right.
else is going on. And I know I just made that statement, but I also want to make the statement that a lot of people go into nursing because of the amount of money that they can make. So if you can touch on those things, I appreciate it.
Definitely. So yes, I will say on paper, nursing looks like it does pay a lot. No doubt about that. As other nurses, when it comes to your W-2, it does look handsome. When you get in hand, it's not quite the same. Just a caveat there. But it is a mo one of the most sustainable. And definitely, it's job security. But there definitely are financial benefits to becoming a nurse. You do level up pretty quickly. And I want to say, for the most part, anywhere between an ADN, which is an associate degree in nursing, and a bachelor's, of course, there are varying starts in your pay, but it varies anywhere from between 20 and 30. You have option, of course, per hour, but you do have opportunities where you can grow into various facets of nursing. And that's one of the wonderful things about nursing. You can do anything from being a school nurse, an IV hydration nurse, an operation administrator, a surge nurse, an ER nurse, a nurse educator, radiology nurse. So there are lots of facets within the nursing fraternity that you can excel in. So it does allow, and of course, it varies for a pay grade. You have all the way up to master's degrees, all the way up to doctorate in nursing. You have nurses that particularly just do scientific research in nursing, and you have a doctorate in science in nursing. So you do have all these platforms. You have master's prepared nurses that are clinic psychologists. You have some that are straightly like dealing with craniopathies and doing surgeries. So there's a lot of room for growth in nursing, but I do want to take it back to TikTok nursing is not sustainable. You see a lot of TikToks of, oh, I'm a CRNA and this is what I do. And, I am a this and I make this much money. Yes, there are some cases where you absolutely do that. But you have to remember at the core of nursing is that you want to maintain your patient's safety. And the only way you get to that is through studying, through experience, and being able to identify what's going wrong with my patient. So yes, you may be, a master's prepared nurse that does facial Botox. That's okay. But again, you have to remember these, there are nerves that innervate the face. You can cause paralysis for these patients. You can cause nerve damage. So you need to make sure that you have gotten experience, that you have studied well, and that you're not just, starting a business because, oh, I want to make money in nursing. So at the core of nursing, every nurse needs to remember the reason why you came into nursing. Of course, everybody wants that financial benefit, but always, I always caution my new nurses who are coming in, I've done 2 years and now I want to go and, do cranial surgery. Remember that experience. This is not just paper that we're pushing. These are people's lives. So make sure that you are properly prepared for that and you have done the necessary steps to get there because these are people's lives. This is somebody's baby. This is somebody's mom. This is somebody's grandma whose 80th is coming up and they're very excited. And yes, she is 80, but there's so much value in her life that one mistake can end that.
Oh my goodness. Well, you just bring me to your book. I mean, make sure we can hold it up. This is her book. And I'm going to tell you, if you're even thinking about being a nurse, you need to read this book. This book has everything imaginable in it. And if you could just tell us a little bit about it. I love this book. I'm not a nurse, but I'll tell you what. It has some of the greatest information in here you could ever imagine. So tell us a little bit, and why did you write the book, first of all?
Yes. So, dear nurse, reward yourself, reward your patient. Actually, came out of my what I tag my COVID experience. And during COVID, I was a manager of an ICU, IMU, 30 beds, and it was terrible. You, as the public, had it bad. It was scary. There were shortages. You didn't know if it was safe to go out and get groceries or pick up your medicine. But behind the scenes in healthcare, it was 1,000 times worse, Pamela. The trauma the PTSD that we as healthcare workers have suffered since then, we haven't gotten time to unpack. It's compounded. You just have to keep going because people's lives depend on you. And during COVID, I can't tell you the amount of times I saw nurses who gave up nursing. Brand new nurses who came in wanting to save lives, wanting to make a difference. And I could see the light fading from their eyes. Like, this is not what I came into nursing to do. You know, my grandma was a nurse, my mom was a nurse, and this is not, it was such a scary thing. My nurses who had been doing this for 30 years were just like, I can't put my grandkids, my spouse at risk. Like, I can't do this. We were garbed from head to toe. Some of us were pregnant. Some of us had 2 and 3 year olds. You are worried about what you were bringing home. You know, people wouldn't go home for 4 days at a time. You know, oh yes, we had, you know, I had friends of friends who their nurse didn't show up and they were found dead at home. It was horrendous. And so, you know, I again, so many nurses I picked up off the floor and I just started to journal to get some of this out somewhere because it really refocused for me what nursing means, how underappreciated it was and has been. And when I started journaling, this is what came out. So I like to call it a wee book. It is a bunch of love letters from nurses to nurses. And what it does, it allows a behind the scene peek of how do I become a nurse? And it features everything from your future nurse, your student nurse, your new grad nurse, your new dad, new mom nurse, a night nurse, a master's prepared nurse, all the way up to a retiring nurse. How do I navigate this thing called nursing? If I am interested as a future nurse, what are the steps to get there? How do I get into nurse get into nursing? How do I best prepare myself for nursing? Suppose I am an ER nurse. How do I navigate this? How do I self-preserve, but how do I show up for others while keeping myself safe? You know, I am a new dad, new mom nurse. How do I leave my 6 month old baby and go out and care for somebody else's child while my child is at home with the nanny. You know, so it kind of navigates those things. And for those who are wanting to go into different arenas of nursing, it helps you to see behind the scenes of what it entails. Is that something that is my cup of tea? How do I best prepare myself to become a nurse resident in an ICU? And so it talks about these things that we don't readily get information from we d information about we don't supply each other with that information, and what it does, it just peeks behind the door and really gives that. And I like my new grad nurses, my nurses in residences absolutely love that because it helps them to prepare themselves not only emotionally but mentally for what is it that I'm going into, and they feel much more prepared. And I'm that just makes me happy when I hear that because that is the full intention of the book.
Wow, the book actually for me, it's also a patient's book, but it's also because most of the time when we're looking from our perspective, we see nurses, we don't even consider the things that they go through. And it
Yes.
gives us a clear, concise view of all of the encounters, all of the hurdles, all of the barriers, all the things that nurses go through, and it makes you, as someone on the outside, respect and appreciate nurses so much more. And
That.
then I think about the nurses that are going into it. I think about schools. This is a book, I believe, that should be on the reading list of everyone that is going to be a nurse. Nurses, if you haven't had it, you need to get it because it takes you through the entire process. And you journaling, how was that for you? Because you were able to get it out. And how did it help your mental health after COVID? And like you said, still the trauma still affects you to this day. Because if it didn't, I'm looking, there is a nurse shortage right now.
Oh
So
yeah.
explain that, if you would.
So it was cathartic for me. I had never in my entire life been so emotionally distraught before. And I am, as you see, happy-go-lucky. Most of the time, it has to really be something that irks me to really get me on my wrong side, as they would say. But it was so emotionally devastating to see people who care so much about others, who give so much of themselves, show up empty. And that was the trigger for me, because when I started writing, I was taking a lot of that in. I was, bolstering people, reminding them of their reason, telling them that we're going to get beyond this. As a manager, you are having to pour back into your people. I was doing nights. I would flip the days the next day. I was doing swing shifts. I was going into rooms. I remember one time we went into this room, and this dad, he was like 42. We were reading a goodbye letter from his 8-year-old because we
Oh
knew
my
he was going to die. There was another lady, one of our first patients. She was maybe in her 50s. There was supposed to be this family funeral that they were going to as a family. And so they all got into this car together to travel to her mom's funeral. And when they came back, she had COVID. And now the family was just like, this is our mom. We just buried grandma. There's no way we can bury mom. And her husband, they had been married for 30 years,
Oh,
never slept apart, and he could not go into the room. So all of this, when your nurses are telling you, when you're seeing this, when you're trying to damage control these conversations because you're trying to explain to them, I have to keep you safe. I understand that, you haven't been apart from your wife for 30 years, and they're angry, they're sad, they're hurt. You're absorbing this. You're absorbing the frustration from the nurses as well, because they want to let them in there, but you know the end result. And so for me, I took on so much of that. And I brought that home to my 3 and 7-year-old and my husband, who, are just like, it's not only the physical threat of it, it's the emotional threat, and your mental capacity to handle that and to also dissociate, like, this is what's happening at work. I now have to come home and be a wife and a mother. And how do you dissociate the two? So this was cathartic for me, but it also, I wanted to remind nurses that there is more than COVID. Does not define us. It has refined us. And so how do we get back into there? How do we remember to care for ourselves, refill our own cup, so we can help to fill the cup of others? And that's really where it started. So I peeled it back all the way to my future nurses. Yes, if you want to become a nurse, make sure that this is what you want to do. And if you do, hallelujah. This is how you do it.
Right.
My nurses who are already in this, remember, take a pause, refill your cup. This is how you do it before you go out and save the world. And saving the world is what you want to do. This is why you're doing it. Here's how to do that. And I'm so happy that you brought up that point, that you got, as a non-nurse, the essence of what nurses do go through. Because I promise, we are not robots, we are human.
That's right.
We have the same struggles that everybody else have. We have bills to pay and financial struggles, and we want to study and we want the best for our children, and we want to take care of our parents, and we have bad days just like everybody else, but we try our utmost to not let that become a burden to our patients. We come in, we want to smile, we want to give you the best advice, we want to make sure that your 10,000 tablets we have divided and explained and made sure you understand how to move forward to avoid those complications. But in this book, I wanted to capture all of that. And I hope that we have done that from all the advice and the consult and all these amazing nurses that I have worked with over the years that I have, because they have sustained me too and have given me so many lessons that I have been so grateful to learn, because it has made me the nurse I am today. So it's a way to pay it forward, to give homage to them, but to also help our future nurses and our current nurses to regain that focus, to refill their own cup, and to advance their own careers.
I love that because as women in general, we do not fill our cup up.
We do not.
And you can't give from an empty vessel, but we do do it, and then to be a nurse on top of it. And I remember when I first came into public health, and I remember working in maternal child health, running a program. And I remember my professor said one thing. She said, "I don't care if you need to go to the hotel and sit and pick your toenails." And I was like, "What is she talking about?" I couldn't even get a grasp of really what she was saying. But what she was saying is take time for yourself. And many times, I don't think we know how to do it. Oh, I'll go get a manicure and I'll get a pedicure or whatever we're doing. But I don't think we clearly understand how to take time for ourselves and to fill our self up to overflow. You
True.
know, I'm still working on it today, so maybe you can help us try to understand that. You know, how do we do that?
Yes, you are so right. You are so right. And I think it's just in our nature, as women, and I think just how we're grown, all of us have these cultural backgrounds and diversity in how we're grown. But I think for most women, it is, you are a nurturer, or you are a strive, you always strive to be the best, or you always want to make sure that you have credibility and your integrity. So whether you choose to be a professional who, oh no, family is not for me, or you want to be a family person and profession is not for me, or you want a mix of both, which is the most current status, there's always this expectation to be all the things, but of all the things to be a nurturer, and so it is hard for us to disassociate and be like, okay, I'm going to be selfish today and look after myself. But what I've learned is there is a difference between selfishness and self-preservation.
Yes.
And I find that profound. Selfishness versus self-preservation, it's a whole different kettle of fish. They're two different things. So self-preservation for me is, yes, absolutely go and do your manicure and your pedicure, but disconnect. Tell your husband, honey, I'm going to do a mani and a pedi for an hour. I do not need to hear anything about dinner, and I don't want the children calling me. And
Love.
sometimes, that's what it takes. I am going to go today to the spa for 3 hours, and I'm going to turn my phone off, and that is okay.
Yes.
Just yes, and we have to. Just recently, my husband told me, "Okay, ma'am, you have been going through a lot, and you need a weekend away. You need a staycation." I was like, "No, I'm okay. I've been fine. I've been away from the kids. I've been going through treatments. And he was like, "No." And he did. He sent me away to a hotel for 3 days,
I love
and
him.
I was this deafening silence. I took my books. I went out and had dinner by myself. I sat by the lake. I read. I was like, I could get used to this. And that is such an amazing thing when you have a partner that understands that you need to refill your cup in order to give back. And it doesn't have to be a partner. It can be a best friend. It can be a mom who's like, girl, we are going on a cruise for just 3 days. You have to, because it grates on us mentally, emotionally, physically, these chronic diseases. Women have so many of them. And when these stressors build and build and build without us realizing that we are taking on too much all the time, that is one thing that having cancer has let me realize. I had already, started to unpack the emotional burden and the mental stress during this COVID pandemic, and that's what it caused for me, for nurses on that professional level. But on this personal level, I was just like, yeah. And somebody told me, so I see another book coming, ma'am. And I was just like, don't know about that, but I want to make sure that I'm advocating for that on a personal level, not just on this professional level. Because, like you said so rightly, being nurses, most of the nursing profession are women. But in addition to that, not only being women, but we're nurses on top of it. So it's like a double stacked burger of emotional, mental, and physical stress. So just peeling back those layers, on a personal level and really taking that time to disconnect when you are doing self-therapy, self-preservation therapy, whether that's yoga, reading a book, hugging a tree, giving flowers, volunteering, disconnecting from those things that are your regular stressors to truly immerse yourself in that moment, in that experience is really what I think is self-preservation, not selfishness. And that's where I draw the line with that. And I'm working on it too. Absolutely working on it.
I really appreciate that because as a nurse, my mother also had breast cancer, and I would hope that you will be able to speak to us about that. My mother worked nights, and I also know there's a correlation between shift work and cancer, and I don't have the research in front of me. So those who want to look it up, you can look it up because it is there. But I'm not saying just because you do shift work or you work the graveyard shift, that's something that is going to happen. But I really would like you to talk about, if you would, your journey and being an advocate for nurses or anyone actually who is diagnosed with breast cancer.
So one of the biggest, I want to say hurdles, questions, musings that came to me when I was diagnosed was, could I have avoided this? And for anybody who has been, is on this journey, I want to make sure that you relieve yourself of that guilt because there is nothing that you have done specifically to cause this. Now, if you're a chain smoker for 50 years,
Well,
that's
that's something
questionable.
different.
If you're
Okay.
irradiating
Yes.
yourself every day, with gamma rays for no reason, then that's a different conversation. But for the average person who is like, I try to exercise a little bit, I practice temperance. Yes, I get ice cream or have a glass of wine, two or three times a week. There is no hard and fast to what causes cancer. We are
Exactly.
generally exposed to it. Our cell phones, our radios, working in the hospital, working out too much, or the food that we eat, the GMO things, we're exposed to it on a consistent basis. Thank God for Ancestry.com. It's great that you know your genealogy, but you truly don't know your genes. And you may
No.
have a third removed grandma who had breast cancer, which you didn't know about.
That's
You
right.
might have had a cousin on your cousin brother's side by your mom outside. You never know. So I want to make sure that people are aware and that you relieve yourself of give that, oh my God, I caused this for myself. There's nothing crazy that I do. I don't eat red meat, drink wine, have ice cream, irradiate myself, and wear the cell phone on my face every day for the last 40 years. There's nothing that you have caused, right? So I want to make sure that people are clear about that. Of course, there are lifestyle changes that you can do to reduce your risk, right? So adequate sleep, proper hydration, exercising, meditation, eating healthier, less meat, more, vegan friendly options. Absolutely. But finding that temperance and finding that balance is key. And again, it's just the luck of the draw sometimes. But I want to make sure, again, underscore that this is not something that you have chosen, that you've brought upon yourself. But moving forward, how can you change some of those habits? How can I do more of these positive things that will help reduce that stress, reduce that burden, unpack my mental baggage, and how do I care more for myself moving forward? That is one huge thing I've learned in just this journey.
Wow. And I agree with you because everybody's lifestyle is different. And I think about, I've been getting mammograms since I was 36 years old because of my mother having breast cancer. And I tried to look at everything that she did. And the one thing, when you talked about the mental piece, the mental health piece, I think a lot of times My mother had so much on her plate that she never took time for herself to kind of get that in order, to step back away. It was, she was always on all the time, you
All the
know.
time.
And I tried to look at some of the things that she had done in her life and like, okay, mom did this, I'm gonna do this. I'm gonna try to do all these other things, and you know, try to look into her life and clearly see, well, maybe I don't want to do that. Well, I don't drink wine. I don't drink alcohol, that because I don't have the tolerance. All I need is a sip and I'm out like laughing all over the place. So it's just kind of like that's a non-starter for me, even though they talk about the wonders of what you know, the grapes can
That
do
ride.
for you. Yes. And it's like, okay, well, I got to find it another way. So, you know, understanding I've worked nights. I used to work nights at a school called Drake University, and I hated the nights. Oh my goodness. So, you know, I go back and I check off these things trying to figure out what can I do differently. And not, you know, what my mother didn't do. She exercised with Jack Elaine, if anybody remembers him. I mean that piece of stepping back is so critical. No, I applaud your husband saying you're going to go away, because we never shut down.
We never
There's
shut down.
always
That's so
something
true.
else. So, you know, and I like the part where you say, do not blame yourself. You do not bring it. Can we do better when we know better? Maya Angelou says, when I know better, I do better.
Absolutely,
Right?
absolutely.
So how do we get there? And
How did we get there?
yes, and how do you advocate for other women? How do you advocate to, you know, stand beside them to help them through this process? How did you get through this process?
Well, one of the biggest stigmas, I think, in the world of breast cancer, I found out some very, I want to say, understated facts. Like, minorities are at highest risk.
Yes.
And it's said, but it's not said.
No.
Minorities are at highest risk, and they're especially within the Black woman community. It
Yes.
is very, it's a very personal thing. And even for myself, I struggled with, is this something that I want to share with my friends, my professional community? And I struggled with that a little bit. And then I decided, you know, this is something that other people can learn from. And so when I shared this with my professional community, I actually use my Facebook. And I know for some people, Facebook is so old school, but that's where I have my
That's all
friends
right.
and my family in other countries, and it's a way where we can connect. And so when I shared my story and I started my journey, I shared, you know, updates and, you know, scans and these hard questions that you should ask your doctor. And when I was losing my hair, when I shaved my head, all of these things, because I wanted it to be a story where this can happen to the girl next door. And I happen to be the girl, the brown girl next door, you know. But there's oftentimes a stigma, especially within our community, of, oh my God, this is such a personal thing. I don't want anybody thinking I'm
No.
less of a woman because I had to do a double mastectomy. That double mastectomy saved my life.
That's right. That's
And
right.
just recently, one of these, you know, TV stars that my husband grew up with, she, I can't remember her name now, but she was diagnosed with stage 3 in her 40s, like late 40s. And, you know, she decided to go the alternate route, the holistic route, which again is completely, it's a personal choice. But by the end of her time, she said, I made a mistake. I kept this personal. I didn't do what could have saved me and did a double mastectomy because I wanted to maintain my image and it's costing me my life. She's 50. Beautiful girl, accolades, well known, you know, and it was so sad to see that. It was jarring for him, and he just said, I'm so happy that you decided to go this route. It is a horrible, horrible journey, Pamela, but I'm happy I did it because I Hopefully, we'll get to see my girls graduate
That's
and
right.
maybe walk them down the aisle. But I want to give myself a fighting chance to see that,
That's
you
right.
know, to see them get to high school. And for me, that was a no-brainer. I have
That's
to
right.
give myself the best chance because I need to be around to raise my girls, to see my husband, to enjoy my family, to see my parents get old. And so it is your choice, but talking about it, asking those hard questions, and I applaud you for getting your scan started at 36. Doctors nowadays are like, oh, but you have the power to say, hey, this is in my family. My mom had this. I know that minorities are at highest risk, especially as a Black woman. I am the textbook picture of that, and I want these scans. And if you have a doctor who is ignoring that, it's time to change practitioners. You
Exactly.
have to advocate for yourself. You have to step into a room and own that room and know that your work, your life is worth every single test, every single extra step. And I'm so happy that I had the team that I had from the beginning, from moving from one to the other referral. They prioritized me. And again, you know, my friends say, I know you went into that room and owned it, and they had no choice.
You did.
Maybe some truth in that because I am very focused, but they were so compassionate. And they could have been like, oh my gosh, she's a nurse. And oh my gosh, she has how many degrees? And oh my gosh, let's be careful. Like, oh. Or they could have been like, oh, she's a nurse and she thinks she knows everything. But I really was a patient in this realm because I had never done cancer care before. And so for them to listen to what my concerns were, to advise what the best steps might have been, and then to collaborate to find a care, plan of care that was best suited for me, I am in awe and so grateful to them because they have fought with me at every step, and I cannot give them kudos enough. So being aware, educating yourself, being open to share your journey, get advice from others. There are others who have been down this road. And I even have my own little group. There are three of us. We're all minority people. There's an Asian, Mexican, Hispanic, and there's me. So there are three of us, and we are going through this journey together. We call them our breast cancer buddies. So we talk about these things, the vulnerabilities, the challenges that you have as you're going through this. You know, one of us, she has done five surgeries already. One person only did radiation, and now I did chemo and radiation. So we're at varying stages, but having that sense of community and somebody with whom you can exchange these stories, somebody with whom you can, hey, you need button front pajamas. Oh, hey, I found these wipes. These are great. It really helps to create that sense of knowledge, awareness, advocacy, and to give you that sense of I am not going through this alone. So I encourage anybody who is going through this, it's okay to share with your friends and family. And again, be aware that their reaction may not be the same as yours. They may be just like, oh, well, you know, you just cut them off, throw them in the trash, get new ones. I promise you, sounds easy. It is not.
It is
The
not.
emotional, spiritual, financial, physical burden that cancer brings is unmatched. And I want to say a caveat too that for us above the poverty line, there's this misconception, which you wouldn't know unless you're in this journey, that there are these, there's the their financial resources abounding. No, there are not. And I have to tell you, Unite for Her, Chemo Divas were the only two that came through for me and were able to provide financial support in the form of basic things. Oh, you know, meals that you don't have to worry about. You know, a little check here that, you know, $300. Yes, that can buy medicine. It's nothing that you're gonna break the bank with. But the thought that they considered people above the poverty line and were open to offering options. You have lesson plans. We have this nutritional class. We have this Reiki class that we're offering. It warmed my heart because you qualified for that and you wanted to feel as though you mattered. And not because you're above the poverty line, then, oh, you can afford all that because cancer is expensive.
It
You
is.
wouldn't know that until you're in it. You know, so just that all those pieces that come together, there's a lot more that isn't said about cancer that needs to be said.
Absolutely. For probably My husband, 5 years, for me, 4 years. We did the Susan G. Komen, raised the money, and walked 60 miles in 3 days. Well, we don't do that anymore. However, you brought up a really good point. I used to work with the Black Nurses Association in San Diego, and they trained all the sororities, the Black sororities, in San Diego. And we all went out and did
Love that.
wherever we could to get people to do breast cancer checks, men and women as well. And I know we're both here in Texas, and having a place that you can donate to, because you bring that up, and it's so imperative that we have other opportunities. There's other programs that are out there to be able to help women. And
Absolutely.
I love Susan G. Komen. However, I have to say, when I was working with the Panhellenic, we got a grant from Susan G. Komen, and we were able to pay for the Black Nurses Association so to come out and educate the women. So
Excellent.
pouring into it that way and then receiving it somewhere else. But what I'm looking for is something that is central wherever people may be that they can donate to give,
Yes.
because you bring up such an incredible point. Is first of all, we don't talk about it. Second of all, we don't have the resources available to us. And if there are resources, how do we get to them? How do we know about them? So
Absolutely.
there, you bring up so many things that are so important to women, and it is important to let your family know. And to your point, you said they may not respond the way you want to, just cut it off, because that was my mother's attitude. She was like, well, if it doesn't work, just cut it off. I mean, back then they didn't do a double mastectomy. She had one breast removed, and she was older. She was like 60 years old at that time. And so for her, it was kind of like, well, I'm not even, what is it? But I think I get some of my attitude from her. But anyway, I really believe that we need to know, people need to tell their story. Where can we go? In our community to help other women, we need to be educated ourselves on a regular basis. So there's a lot of things I'm throwing out here. You pick which one you want to talk about.
Yeah, I absolutely believe in paying it forward. I think for me, when I was diagnosed, I did have a nurse navigator. Again, nurses saving the day. A nurse navigator who really was helpful in, being empathetic, being compassionate. Then she threw a whole list of all these numerous organizations that were local and national, and said, these are some of the resources, which was great. The problem was, I had to, in addition to all the alleys that I was down emotionally, spiritually, mentally, physically, all the alleys, I had to now try and dedicate time to call, to identify each of these, to see if I even qualified. And you're going through all these tabs to find out, okay, here is the application sheet, and then you have to fill this out, and this one you have to mail, and this one applications only open on the third Wednesday of every month. But then, oh my gosh, it was so taxing. So when you're dealing with appointments every day, you're trying to stay on top of this, like figuring out your kids, explaining this stuff, like finding how do I get time off? Where is my short-term disability? Do I have critical care? You don't have the time or the mental capacity to search through all of these to find out that, oh, out of the 20 you sent me, it seems I may qualify for five. So I'm trying to set an alarm for the third Monday at 7 a.m. Central Time to see if I can send this thing that I filled out to this particular group. It was overwhelming and impossible. So it wasn't until I actually started coming back to myself, and that's another thing, chemo brain is no joke. You don't know one day from the other. You feel like you're in a constant fog. And I was like that for 6 months. I feel like I'm, like 40 to 50% coming back to functionality. But it wasn't until I felt like I was waking up, I was like, oh, let me see, let me go through this list and see what I qualify for. And again, out of those 20 people, organizations, Unite for Her sent me a wonderful little gift box that allows you to have meals delivered or, veggies from their center, and they allow these Reiki classes and yoga sessions, or they have webinars that talk about how to navigate nutrition classes. Amazing. Chemo Divas sent me a check that I was able to like put towards okay, buying some pajamas and some wipes when I'm doing surgery. But they also offered this community. This sense of community where they would offer financial advice. How do you recoup now that you've gone through cancer? Financially, what are some of the things that you need to set in place for if cancer happens? And so those are things that we're educating each other about. We have this sense of community. They have guest speakers that come on and talk about some of those things. And so we're able to share those resources amongst each other. And even for my own groups, I would say, hey, get in contact with this group, get in contact with this group. And I'll be forever grateful. And like I say, it's not things that they are, it's not lottery money, but it's the thought that counts, that people that aren't, particularly below the poverty line, we need help too. I had scans that were $800 to $1,000 after insurance. Everything was out of pocket until you hit that $6,000 or that $10,000. And it's your health. You are literally in the fight for your life. So it's not like you can be like, oh, well,
I
I
can't get
can't
that
do that
today.
CT scan today.
Yes.
Yeah, it's $1,000. And I don't know anybody who has a sense, $1,000. And if you do, introduce me to them because I need to be adopted. I'm okay with that. But it really becomes financially taxing. And you're not only dealing with, again, the emotional, the mental, the spiritual, the social aspect of it, but you're dealing with that as well. And so for these two in particular who showed up for me, I will be forever grateful. And when I get to that point where I am fully healed and back to, I will absolutely be joining those groups because they are paying it forward in tangible ways that really make a difference and make you feel seen, heard, cared for in a personal way from an organization.
So what I hear, and I thank you for that because it's so important, what I hear is that not only does the person who is going through the journey, it's all the people that are around them
Oh,
that
yes.
really needs to, that we need to step up. We need to step
Absolutely.
up, we need to be educated, and we have to become more empathetic into what a
Absolutely.
person may be going through.
Absolutely.
Oh, wow,
Absolutely. Absolutely.
That's wow. Yeah.
Yes. Because for me, it not only affected me, but it affected my husband, who now has to do work. My mother-in-law was a lifesaver because she now had to take on the role of what mommy used to do for my girls. In addition to her own life, she now, has to get the girls ready and sort out lunch and sort out dinner and the things that I used to be able to do, grocery shopping. But it doesn't hit home. And that's the importance of having your family around. My girls were able to like, oh, I can learn to do laundry now. My little babies are like switching the laundry because it is a familial impact. My sister was like, okay, I'm coming for surgery. My brother is like, okay, I'm paying for you to go and be with her for surgery. My parents are like, okay, what do we need? When are we coming? It really does take a village. People that were close to me, I call them my meemaws, who were in my church family, showed up with meals and they would be like, okay, what do you need from Costco? Tell me, what are you feeling for today? Okay, you need mangoes. I will get you that. My neighbor who had become so close, they were like, okay, we're picking up groceries. What do you need? And they, so it's a family It's a community issue because it not only affects you, and you have to be aware of how it affects other people and how they process it as well.
Right.
Because, like, again, everybody may not be like, oh, woe is me. And you don't need everybody to be, woe is me.
No.
Oh my gosh. You need somebody to be like, girl, you got this. You are
That's
strong.
right.
We're here for you. What you need, and you need people to show up in tangible ways. Like my work group, my boss was like, anything you need. They started this donation, delivery of food thing I didn't even know existed. And my team got together and did that, and all the girls from my night and contributed to this. I didn't know I would have needed that, but they did. And so this sense of community, I am forever indebted because they showed up for me in tangible ways that I didn't even know.
Wow.
And I'm forever grateful.
Wow. And the other thing that is so powerful, the other thing I hear is we have to learn how to receive.
Oh my gosh, Pamela. Yes, I was not used to that. And that was such a big challenge. I had prayer groups and people praying for me, and I am not a spotlight person. I am usually the one behind the scene organizing those things or saying, hey, Pamela is sick. What are we doing? So to be on the receiving end of that, like your mother would probably say, I felt so cute. But I had to understand this is because people love you. You have done so much for them. They want to show up for you. And it was difficult for me to receive and understand that. But I got to the point where I understood that this is how they are showing me love. Some people could not provide financially,
That's
but
right.
they would pray every day. And oh my gosh, I could tell my friends the prayers are what brought me through because my spirituality is very important to me. And I am very big with like my relationship with God and my family. And I had my prayer groups, my dad has prayer groups. I had friends on Facebook are just like, we're putting you under the cross.
That's right.
And
That's
I
right.
feel like, just that combination of all of the things is what really brought me through. And like I said, this is the hardest thing I've ever done. And to have a village that fought with me is just, that gets me emotional.
It is so amazing. I mean, the process, the journey, and I am so grateful for you to come here today and to tell your story. And I know we're winding down, and I would wonder if there are or is, I say are because I hope there's more than one, but if there is anything, the last things that you want to say to this viewing or listening audience, what would it be? Or what would they be?
What would it be? Be true to yourself. You are worth it. Always try to pay it forward, but self-preserve while you do. And find something that is bigger than you that makes your life worth it. For me, it's God, making the path for me. My mantra is be still and know that I am God. And for me, he does that. He creates these opportunities. He has put the amazing family that I had that led me to the path of nursing, self-love, appreciation for who I am, who Lamone is. And that has led me down the path of where I am. I see people for who they are. I try to pour back into people. By being true to who I am as well. And yes, it is a balancing act, but how much more rewarding is it to be a part of something bigger than who you are and preserving yourself enough to value yourself, but to also value others so you're part of a system that works flawlessly and effortlessly.
I love that. I love that. Thank you, Lamone. Don't forget, this is her book, Dear Nurse, Reward Yourself, Reward Your Patient. This is so important. Get this book. And where can we find this book?
It is on Amazon, so we wanted to make sure that it was accessible everywhere. So anywhere you are in the world, Amazon is your place. So I have people in Dubai, in Canada, in Emirates, wherever they are, in Guatemala, wanting,
Wow.
ordering it. It's on Amazon.com. You just literally write in "Dear Nurse, Reward Yourself" book. You can Google
That has
me,
just
you'll
come up.
find
So
it.
what
You'll
we'll
come up.
do is we'll put her information in the notes, the name of the book, in case you forget it, because I know
Yeah.
some of you are listening like, I can't write that down right now. So we will put it in the notes so you'll be able to see it and click on it. Again, Lamone, we thank you so, so much. And my hope is that you will come back.
Yes.
That's awesome. You heard her. You heard her say it. So we just thank you. We love you. And thank you for sharing your important journey today. It is
Thank you
well
so
needed.
much.
Thank
Thank
you.
you for having me.
You are so welcome. Bye-bye.
Thank you all for joining us today on Passion and Purpose. It's been wonderful to connect with you, and I hope you found our conversation as enlightening and inspiring as I have. A huge thanks to our guests who contributed to the discussion and share their experiences and insights. Your stories are the heartbeat of this podcast.